Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. And it is my special pleasure to welcome a debutante, an author of a very hot new novel called How to Survive a Summer. His name is Nick White. Nick White is on the faculty of the Department of Creative Writing at The Ohio State University. He is associate professor. He was born in Mississippi. Wait till you hear him speak and wait till you read his book. Welcome, Nick White.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Delighted also to welcome, as always, the irrepressible and irreplaceable Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com, which everybody who loves books and loves to read should read. Welcome, Cassie Rose.
Thank you. It's good to be
here. And Robin Nesbitt is here with the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Robin is the manager of the Hilliard branch, and she is here with quick picks from the library. So welcome, everybody.
Thanks.
Let's start with Nick White, since you're making your debut with us and joining the All Sides Weekend family. First of all, tell us a little bit about this new novel called How to Survive a Summer.
Well, the novel centers around a survivor of a gay to straight conversion camp that occurred in Mississippi, and it really is a book about someone figuring out how to tell their story once they have lived through it. And the novel sort of deals with multiple stories and trying to unravel them and dealing with how we both physically and emotionally deal with trauma. But I also think it's kind of, it's funny. It's not just such a, it's not a dark read. I think it would make a great summer read.
Well, it's
says a wonderful, so in the title.
I found it a wonderful summer read, but there was a lot of depth to this, and there was a potential to upset the reader in an absorbing way, in a good way. I told you I threw it against the wall because I got so, your writing got me so caught up in what was going on, and there were some also very funny points. But there's also there are a couple of plot streams. There is a horror movie that also is a big part of this. Talk about that a little bit and how you fit that in.
Well, the inspiration for his reasoning for traveling back home to Mississippi is this horror movie that he discovers is about to be released, and it's supposedly based on his experiences at this camp, based on a memoir from one of the counselors at this camp. And the memoir is adapted, and the screenplay is revised and revised until it looks completely nothing like what really happened at the camp, and it's turned, in fact, into a slasher flick. And at first, a lot of critics in the queer community are outraged by this movie because they feel that it is trafficking in the stereotype of the psychopathic queer killer, that was started or sort of initiated way back with Norman Bates and Psycho. Mm-hmm. If we want to go further to like Brian De Palma and Dressed to Kill, this Silence of the Lambs, mm-hmm. this idea that any sort of like expression of queerness is directly equated with being sort of subhuman. Mm-hmm. And so queer critics are rightly so outraged, and there's protests about the movie. But eventually the critical opinion of the movie changes and shifts, and they begin to start showing the movie actually at gay clubs. Hmm. And begin to kind of embrace the movie as this sort of unconsciously camp in the Susan Sontag sort of way, movie that can be also read as a radical rejection of heteronormativity, to throw some academic terms.
Who is this novel for?
Well, my publicist would want me to say it's for everyone. But I think when I was writing this book, I was thinking about the person I was when I was 15 and 16 years old, a closeted gay kid from Mississippi. And I was really writing it for people from the South who are queer and has had to deal with that space and negotiate that space.
Tell me about the process of writing this book, because you, as you just said, and as I surmised without knowing you, you were drawing on life experiences as you were writing somewhat. Tell me about the actual process of writing this and then weaving the strands together that included the film that became a slasher mm-hmm. film, but retaining really the dignity of the characters.
Right.
It's not a campy book.
Right. I started the book about 4 years ago, and it was around the time when I had just started being comfortable with living queer. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting being back in Columbus, because Columbus is where I first came out, and it was a beautiful experience for me. I was surrounded by a bunch of great friends here who really supported me. And so I started writing the book thinking about what my life would have looked like had I been outed when I was younger, or had I not been in such denial about who I was at such a young age. I mean, looking back, the cues were all there. I mean, when I was in the 11th grade, I wrote a fan letter to B. Arthur. And, I mean, if that's not a red flag, I don't know what is. So the signs were there, but I was in, and she wrote me back. I have an autographed picture of her that I keep in my office. I know that where I was, the time and place, my parents were very involved in the Southern Baptist Church. My father was not like a preacher. It was not a preacher as the narrator's was, but my father was the song director. Mm-hmm. And my mother was very involved as well. And we sort of lived in the church. This church was sort of the center of our lives. I was a true believer. And I know that had I not been in such denial about it, about who I was and my same-sex desires and my body even, I would have, if I had been aware of this, I would have, the person I was back then, despite my parents' response to it, I would have asked my parents to send me to conversion therapy. Hmm. I would have wanted to go. And like when I came to that realization, thinking about who I was back then, that was pretty heartbreaking for me. And I wanted to sort of explore that impulse, because as much as the father in this book wants Will to go to this conversion camp, he wants to go too.
Will, the protagonist.
Yeah. And so he has to, as he's looking back on who he was, he has to sort of deal with that and deal with feelings of shame for that. And I found this, talking to survivors of conversion therapy, one thing that I found that was really interesting and also kind of heartbreaking was that a lot of them live in the closet about going to conversion therapy. Hmm. It's almost like you substitute one closet for another. And I found that to be interesting, that it's something that they don't like to talk about.
You're listening to, I beg your pardon, we have to take a break. I just want to come back, hold that thought. We are listening, we're talking with Nick White, whose new novel is called How to Survive a Summer. Nick is on the faculty of the Creative Writing Program at The Ohio State University. This novel is getting a lot of attention. You've been spending a lot of time doing readings and doing tour dates. I want to ask you when we come back about some of the kickback you might be getting from the novel. We'll also talk with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and with Robin Nesbitt from the Columbus Library with Quick Picks. Don't go away. We are back. Today's edition of All Sides Weekend. We are talking about books with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, with Nick White, who has been talking about his new novel called How to Survive a Summer, and with Robin Nesbitt from the Columbus Library. I want to veer off just a little bit to get, first of all, to a quick pick, which I suspect Nick White's novel is going to be, certainly after this show, a quick pick from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Robin Nesbitt, first of all, real fast, what's a quick pick and what do you have for us?
So quick picks are bestsellers that if you walk into a location, one of our branches, you can just pick it up if you've been waiting on it. It checks out for 3 weeks, no renewals, but it could be your lucky day where you're like, I've been waiting on that book. And then you walk in and go, oh, wow, there it is. So, and we do own Nick's book. I'm sorry, it's not a quick pick yet, but we do own Nick's book. So
the show is not over yet.
I know, right? You can shoot right through the rafters.
That's right.
So today I got, the first one I have is David Sedaris, Theft by Finding. He literally is going to publish all of his diaries. And this is not cleaned up at all. This is literally just chunks from his diary. And I started it, and this is David when he is snarky and when he is young and he is cranky. I mean, even crankier than, so I couldn't read it. I have to admit that I think maybe I'll like him later on, but
here's a question. Why, if someone's going to publish, even David Sedaris is a well-known humorist and writer going back 30 years.
Right.
I mean, is anybody that interesting outside of Samuel Pepys who can publish this entire diary?
Exactly. Diaries? I mean, this starts 1977 through 2002. And my understanding is that he's going to publish, because he is an avid diarist. I mean, he records everything literally every day. And so it's not exactly the entire diaries. I believe he's cherry-picked pieces out of his diary. But yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea. But it is checking out. I mean, I think David Sedaris fans, and I read a review that said, by the time you get to the end of it, it gets better. He gets a little less.
By the time you get to 2002?
Right. But a little less cranky.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I think cranky is good, though. That's David Sedaris. What's the name of
it? It's called Theft by Finding, Diaries 1977 to 2002.
And it is one of many quick picks now available at the Columbus Metropolitan Library.
Yep.
Thank you, Robin Nesbitt. Yep. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. You are fresh off either a reading or a talk you gave at Gramercy Books on Elizabeth Stout. You had us reading her latest book that I couldn't put down. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. Anything is possible. How was that evening? I know Nick was also there at Gramercy Books doing a reading. How was that evening, and what do you have for us to read, Cassie Rose?
Well, the evening was great, and we had a lot of readers there that loved the book, also had a lot of questions about the book. Some people didn't like the book, so it was really a great discussion. And there's going to be another book club that I will host in October, so I'll talk about that maybe next month and bring that book out. I want to recommend a book called Little Sister by Barbara Gowdy that just came out. Barbara Gowdy is known for her highly imagined books, doing them very well with a literary quality. And this one, you know, hits the mark with a young woman who owns an old movie theater running classic movies. It's been in her family for a long time, and a thunderstorm happens, and she's in her office, and she gets transported into the body of another person. And it's a woman who is vastly different from her, whose name is Harriet Smith, and she's an editor at a publishing company and has a lot of romantic issues. And the episodes are brief, and the first one she thinks she maybe had a silent migraine, or maybe it was the MSG at the Chinese restaurant. And she doesn't tell anyone this because she knows they'll say, oh, you're dreaming or whatever. And she knows she's not dreaming. So she goes with it. And that's the beauty of Barbara Gowdy, is that you go with it too. And it's heartwarming. It's fun. It's funny. Her mother is at the concession counter, and her mother has dementia. And, you know, there's compassion in that as much as also the humor. Pizza man comes and her mother picks up the toaster oven to pay the pizza man. And you know, and you're heartwarmed by the woman, but at the same time, you're laughing. So it's really a highly enjoyable book. It resolves wonderfully. And the imagination is just, it's just a perfect book.
Where did you find this writer? Because it sounds like a wonderful kind of almost like a fairy tale, a fun fairy tale.
Yes. I mean, she's been around for a long time. She had a book she wrote called Mr. Sandman or The Sandman a long time ago that I read.
Yeah.
And is very well known for this. for this type of the writing that she does. So I was aware of that when the book was coming out and it hit the forecast with Publishers Weekly, and I was kind of following it and then thinking, yeah, I think I really want to read this. And it came for me at the perfect time, too, because I was reading so many books that were very dark and I needed to find one to pull me out of it. And this is a perfect one.
Well, that leads me to something I wanted to go back with Nick White for a moment about How to Survive a Summer. You really do wonderfully well weave darkness and light. I mean, that sounds a little Wagnerian, having it said it that way. But seriously, I mean, it, on the same page, it can be funny and very deep at the same time, this novel. Where did that come from? Is that just that what your life was, or what your imagination went as you were writing the book?
Well, I think it may be my instinct, and maybe it's just because of the family that I come from. Anytime you deal with tragedy, you try to make it better with a joke. and I think that's how life is. It's not, you're not completely mired in the dark 100% of the time, no matter what the circumstance is. I think there are always like glimmers of humor and light there. I think to quote Dolly Parton, laughter through tears is my favorite emotion. And and I wanted the book to not just be a completely dark read. I wanted there to be some humor there, because the boys, when they get to the camp, I mean, it is sort of an absurd situation that they're being put through in addition to being abusive.
Forgive me, your accent, I have to ask you, if you consider yourself a Southern writer, is that a dated genre? I mean, because we do talk about Faulkner, and we talk, Mississippi particularly has this
right.
Incredible heritage of writers. Eudora Welty, is that still accurate or useful to type yourself in that way or not?
I don't know. I think my book takes place in the South and the Midwest, and I think And I think it was important for me to show queer lives that didn't happen in the metropolis, that didn't happen on the East or West Coast. I wanted to show what queer life looked like in spaces and places that have traditionally been less than hospitable, shall we say. And because I think like there's a narrative impulse in queer fiction, particularly, where if you're from a small town or a rural area, the narrative arc is to leave that small town and go to the city and find one's identity there, sort of going all the way back to like John Retchie's City of Night.
And never go back,
right?
Right. In fact, your whole life becomes about not being from some place where you were born.
Right.
And you don't want to do that.
I don't want to do that, no. And I wanted the book to be, because the narrative arc of this book is him actually returning home. And I wanted to explore that and explore how does someone reconcile themselves with a place and with a people that you have an affinity for and you in some ways love, but don't necessarily doesn't necessarily value you? And like, is that possible?
Right. And I think what's happened to your protagonist is that he has outgrown the need to be valued in that way by people. He's moved on. And that, I think, is to me, that was the trajectory of the novel. We're talking about a novel called How to Survive a Summer by Nick White. Nick White is among our guests here on today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and Robin Nesbitt, the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. I want to go back to Cassie Rose because I get a lot out of your blog, thelongestchapter.com, and I just wanted you to bring people up to speed about what's on the blog right now.
Well, I wrote a blog post about a situation that happened with a city inspector coming to my house for I had installed a new AC, an air conditioner, and a furnace. And a lot of I have a lot of books. And so sometimes people walk in my house, and if they don't know me, it can elicit a reaction. And this gentleman walked in and sort of did as I said in the blog post, he did sort of a rubberneck at the books that were on the landing, and then went down and did the work of the furnace and the AC and came back up. And I asked him to check my gas fireplace. And of course, that took him into the living room where there are quite a bit of books in the bookcases. And at that point, I could see he was looking at the books with purpose and yet talking with me. And so when we were leaving, I said something about hanging out with my dogs in the books this weekend to see if he would respond to that. And he said that he had started reading, that he didn't read much in high school, didn't like it. And he had just finished reading The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, cool.
And I said, explained to him why I had so many books. And then he gave me his business card. And so I gave him a list of books. I emailed them to him. And so that's what I put on the blog post, is that story as well as the list that I emailed to him of. And he said he liked older books or older environments. So many of them were Pulitzer Prize winners. I didn't intend that, but from the 1940s and 1950s.
Yeah, but The Grapes of Wrath, that guy's a keeper.
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, that's a keeper. You know, he's right, you know.
So I thought, for example, he would like All the King's Men by Robert Penrose.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
I thought he would like that one. And then I put several others on there, and so I just shared it on the blog.
Cool.
We're talking about books, and we want to hear from you. If you'd like to join the conversation, send an email. Send an email. That's the quickest way right now. Send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Let us know what you're reading. Ask questions, and we'll get to you on the air. Again, the email address, allsides@wosu.org. Let's hear from you. Let's hear about what you are reading, and maybe respond to some of the recommendations we're getting from Robin Nesbitt at the Columbus Library with another quick picks. We've already discussed David Sedaris's diaries, that do go on.
Yes.
What do we have now?
Well, and just to piggyback off of what Cassie said, I run into that a lot where I'm helping customers in the stacks, and they say, I haven't been reading for a while. I need some help. So it is kind of nice to hear people that have read, stopped, and came back. So somebody might like this one. I Can't Make This Up, Life Lessons by Kevin Hart. And part of the attraction of this book, and I'm sorry for the folks listening to this, is the great cover, because Kevin is covered in puppies. But Kevin Hart is a great comedian, an actor. And so he has basically written his life about starting out in North Philadelphia. He was born an accident. He was unwanted. His father was a drug addict. You know, his mom, brother was a crack dealer, petty thief. His mom was strict, beating him. So... sounds like a great story.
Sounds like a lot of laughs
right?
there. Okay.
Exactly. So
I really enjoyed that book, and it really reminded me a lot of his stand-up.
Right.
And he's very, even though like his parents suffered these difficulties, he's very humane in the treatment of them.
Great. Well, and thank you, because I haven't actually read it yet either, but watching him perform and seeing his stand-up, you get the sense that, yeah, he came from an awful beginning, but he's risen above that, and that's not holding him back, and he's not blaming anybody for the background. But yeah, this is definitely a quick pick, and it continues to fly off the shelf. I mean, I'll put it out on display, and boom, it goes right away. So there's a lot of interest, and I think, in these kind of bootstrap stories, you know. So
that are told with kind of humor and love, and you know, you have to be a compelling storyteller, which Kevin Hart certainly is.
Oh, yeah.
Again,
in his
stand-up there. If you don't mind, I want to throw in a vote for a collection of four short stories by Richard Russo that was just published called Trajectory. Mm-hmm. Richard Russo wrote
Empire Falls,
and a couple.
Everybody's Fool, too.
They're based in rural parts of Maine and upstate New York, and they're filled with characters. Mm-hmm. His characters are incredible and have always. Mm-hmm. I just had a senior moment here remembering the titles, but I have read the books and
loved
them.
Richard Size was another one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But Trajectory is four long short stories or short novellas or whatever. And there's one particularly called Voices. So if you want a real can't put this down great writing, I suggest Trajectory by Richard Russo. And I did read a recommendation of Cassie Rose from last time called The End of Eddie, which was an incredible book. The book that you recommended, which is an autobiographical novel by a young man from France, from a very rough part. This isn't a cafe life in Paris. This is pretty rough.
No, it's not. And I had just off air had mentioned it to Nick, because it's small town of a young man who's growing up and trying to deny his sexuality, because it's a hardworking factory town and
unforgiving.
It's very unforgiving. And he tries very hard to be like everybody else. It's a runaway bestseller in France.
And I think when I read, I love the book. And he, the narrator of the book, mentions the idea of conversion therapy is invoked in a portion of that book when he is talking about he sees this weight loss commercial or this like place for people who are overweight can go to this this house or this sort of medical facility and lose weight. And he has this moment where he's like, I just wish I could go to a place like that. That would help me not be so effeminate, help me be more like, I'm paraphrasing this badly, the type of person my father would want. And I think that's the dark appeal of conversion therapy, I think, which is this lie that they can change something about you that shouldn't be changed and can't be changed.
Mm-hmm. And he does leave. And it's because
you cheer him on when that train comes.
that is true.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't think he didn't leave of his own. It was because his schooling, he was in drama and he was doing very well. And a teacher said, I want you to go to this school right. that is out here. And that was the door that opened for him.
Literally his ticket out. Mm-hmm. The End of mm-hmm. Eddie by Edouard Louis. Now, Cassie Rose, you have a book there that's getting a lot of attention right now. And somebody my age remembers this. Mm-hmm. Hue, 1968. It's a book about Vietnam. Yes. Could you talk about Mark Bowden's new book, please?
Yes, and people might remember the name Mark Bowden because he wrote Black Hawk Down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this book is similarly structured. This is about Tet that happened in January of 1968. But he specifically focuses on the takeover of Hue, this small town. Well, not. It's a town that is near the border of North and South Vietnam and was very much the cultural center, the historical center, and the center for the intelligentsia. And the North Vietnamese planned for a long time to have not just an attack but a massive takeover that would spread throughout South Vietnam. They planned this, but their focus – this focus was on Hue. And the Americans and South Vietnamese underestimated it. And, of course, it happened on their new year, their Tet. It was the lunar year, I think, or the year. Anyway, so it surprised everyone because they thought that it would be a ceasefire like there would be at Christmas. And the book is typical to Mark Bowden that it's detailed and to the point where you are very much in the moment, both with the planning of the North Vietnamese and then also what's going on in with Johnson's administration, with Westmoreland, how they're perceiving it, things in the United States and also then in South Vietnam. And he takes you through how it happens, why it happens, and every moment of the Americans coming in and trying to take it over. So it's fascinating. It's a huge book. Mm-hmm. I'm not all the way through it. But it's one of those where I like to read 10, 20, 25 pages a day and move through it slowly while I'm reading something else. Mm. I love to read these kinds of books about Vietnam. One of my other favorites was They Marched Into Sunlight by David Moranis. Same concept. It was October 1967, focusing on that was a certain battalion and then some protesters that were at the University of Madison, I think, and then also what was going on in Washington. So I like that play because it gives you so much history as well as the ability to feel what the people were going through. And what they were thinking.
Well, and I'm wondering, too, I mean, Kevin Burns is coming out with that being the big Vietnam documentary
That's
this
right,
fall.
Yes.
And so I expect mm-hmm. we'll see even more works like this coming out. Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. you will see on WSU. I just want to throw that in
right.
there.
Right, anyway, yeah.
I remember, I'm sure I'm the oldest person in this room right now sitting here with my grandson, Nick White. but Hue, I mean, that is, you know, that name of that city I learned from mm-hmm. Walter Cronkite. Mm-hmm. I mean, we mm-hmm. all learned from Walter. That was so, you know, you'd come home from school, after playing ball after school at 5 o'clock, and that's what would be on TV
right.
for every night for years. So mm-hmm. I was, I knew contextually what Hue was. It was a city. It was part of the Vietnam War, but I didn't know the focus real story of it. So I am looking forward to this book very much. As I say, it's getting a lot of attention mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. Being now almost two generations away from
right.
it. So
well, it'll be interesting because of what for you, for what viewpoint that you have from the newscast and the reading. And so now coming toward it and seeing the actuality of what happened, because we right. did not get the
no.
full truth of what was going on at the time. We were hearing that there was victory.
Mm. Also, you know, if you were in grammar school at the time, you know, I'd like to now go back and read exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. When I was just hearing what to me right. were abstract names
right.
and things like that.
Yeah.
My parents were riveted to it, but I wasn't really picking it up. Mm-hmm. But now, and you know, remembering that part of history and wanting to sort of understand it, I think is mm-hmm. a gift of getting older, if you will. If you'd like to call in and let us know what you're reading, 614-292-8513. That's the number. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Questions or comments from Nick White and his new novel, How to Survive a Summer. Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, whose blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Robin Nesbitt, the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, who brings us quick picks. So far, we've had David Sedaris' diaries and Kevin Hart's new memoir. What else do you have for us?
So one that I actually have read is by Linda Castillo. It's called Down a Dark Road. And she writes Amish mysteries that are actually set here in Ohio. But these are not gentle mysteries. Kate Burkholder was Amish. She's left the fold, basically, and now is the police chief in a town. And so now they are searching this particular one. And she's got I'm going to misremember this, but seven or eight. I mean, she's been writing this series for a while, and it continues to grow in popularity. But we have a convicted murderer who was an Amish man. He was convicted of murdering his wife, and he's come back, and he's telling Kate he grew up with her, and he said, I did not do it. You know, I was in prison and falsely. He's escaped, and he's like, I didn't do it. There's a shootout. The sheriffs come, and there's a shootout at the house, and they kill Joseph. And so now Kate is trying to figure out what happened. She believes him, but trying to figure out how to kind of solve this cold case and get his name cleared up. So, but again, it's not a cozy mystery. It's definitely kind of gritty and bloody and set in Ohio with the Amish. So there you go, right?
Well, it's so great. So we have
right?
Diaries, funny, and we have bloody and mystery locally produced.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Now, Nick White, since you are making your first appearance on the program today, I thought we'd be polite and nice with you, but never mind that. I would love to know what you are reading right now or if you have a recommendation for us.
Yeah, I just finished this wonderfully absurd book called Made for Love by Alyssa Nutting. Many readers may know her from her novel that was published, I think, 3 years ago called Tampa, which is about a female middle school teacher who seduces young boys in her classroom. It's a very dark read. This one is on the exact opposite of the spectrum. The cover itself is just a beauty to behold. It's like if you remember those Lisa Frank products of the early 90s.
Do not hold it up to the camera.
I won't.
Make people go find the book.
Yeah. But the cover for Made for Love is one that we can hold up. It looks inspired. It looks like one of those T-shirts you get made by spray paint on a beach.
Yep.
The book is about this woman who has left her husband, who is this tech giant. His name is Brian Gogol. And she leaves because he wants to try out this new technology with her called a brain meld, because he wants them to be as close as possible, and this freaks her out. And so she moves back to Florida with her father, whom she is estranged from, only to find out that he has started living in sin with a sex doll. And so hilarity ensues. It's a great read, and I couldn't put it down. I read it in 2 days. It was wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
I suspect a lot of other people will be reading it, too. Give me the title one more time and the author.
Made for Love by Alyssa Nutting.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break while Christopher goes to the library website and does a reserve. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We are back with the final segment of today's All Sides Weekend Books. If you want to call or recommend something, I would do it now. 614-292-8513 or ask a question. Pardon me. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Kelly has emailed to recommend The Hot Zone by Richard Preston.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing imagery and often quite terrifying. The book presents the horrific beginnings of the Ebola virus and specifically what the human body encounters. It's not a stale science book by any measure. Again, the title Hot Zone, The Hot Zone by Richard Preston. Kelly, thank you for that. And we have Jackie on the phone with a recommendation. Hello, Jackie. Jackie, are you there?
And Richard Preston has a new one.
Jackie is not there. Okay, sorry about that.
He has a new one out.
Richard, go ahead. Yes,
he has a new one. Lost City of the Monkey God. So, yeah. So he travels down to this Amazon, South America.
That's gotten good reviews.
Yeah.
Richard Preston, that's a writer I don't know. I'm missing something.
The Hot Zone's really good. If you haven't read it, I totally agree with her. It's an awesome read.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cassie Rose, what else do you have for us?
I think I'm going to go with A Horse Walks Into a Bar by David Grossman. This won the Man Booker International Award for Best Book. And it's a stand-up comic, but he's a bad stand-up comic. And he's in a small town in Israel and at a bar that's, in a basement or whatever. And he invites a friend of his who he hasn't seen for a long time to come to this show, a childhood friend. And so basically he gets up on stage and for 2 hours he ends up really processing his life, which is what becomes this novel, and which is narrated by the friend who has come to the show. And bad stand-up comic, it's kind of like what you'd be used to. You go in and sometimes it's cringeworthy, or you think, oh my gosh, and you can feel it going on in the audience. For us, though, we're not cringing through it as much. We become fascinated with him. And that's what's odd about this. It's really, you can't put it down because you get fascinated by what he's doing. You realizing he's opening up about all sorts of stuff he shouldn't be opening up about. He's aware that the person he's invited is in the audience and we're getting the narration of it. And I haven't finished it yet, but I do recommend it because it is one of those that you just get engrossed with this character.
The writer David Grossman, is that someone you've encountered before?
No, I haven't, and I should have. He has been writing for a long, long time, mm-hmm. and I remember one of his first books that came out. And it was called Sea Under Love, which, gosh, that was probably in the 1990s that came out. And he's prolific. He's very good. He's a renowned Israeli writer and gets translated into English. I mean, all of his books do. And it's just this one I thought I've got to start. I've got to pick it up. And it's very good.
We are having a bit of an issue with our phones, so if you're trying to get through, I apologize, but do this. Send an email. You can send an email, and they'll run them in here for us. They're very nice about that. allsides@wosu.org if you have recommendations of what you're reading now. And we always want to know when we sit in this glassed-in room amongst ourselves, being ribald off mic, what people are actually reading. So I'd love to know what people are reading and what you have to recommend. Again, allsides@wosu.org. The Columbus Library does a wonderful job with what they call quick picks, which are popular books or books that become very popular and that you make available pretty easily. So what's the latest?
So the latest is another one. The one I'm waiting on is called The Late Show by Michael Connelly. I love Michael Connelly. I've read everything he's written. He has his most famous series is the Hieronymus Bosch series, where Harry is a detective out in L.A. Connelly is a journalist. He started his work at the L.A. Times. He's a native Floridian, but just can turn a phrase. He also has written The Lincoln Lawyer, so that's Mickey Haller, who runs his law practice out of the back of a Lincoln. This new series that comes out next week is he's starting a new one with a female protagonist, Detective Renee Ballard, and she's moved to the night shift because she launches a sexual harassment complaint against her boss. So it's not out yet, but I can't wait. I've got it on reserve. It looks like about 600 of my fellow Connelly fans have it on reserve as well. But yeah, new one from Michael Connelly's one that I eagerly await.
Michael Connelly's books do tend to fly off the shelves.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
very, very popular.
Yeah.
Are you ever surprised by a quick pick?
Occasionally,
I can't believe this book is but then it really...
Yeah, so like last time I think we talked about On Tyranny became a quick pick. And so that is a series of 13 small essays by a Yale professor about the current political situation and how we need to, looking at past, fascism and Hitler and kind of just staying on guard. And that's a current quick pick,
I'm teaching some of that in the fall.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So that's a quick pick right now.
How are we doing with 1984? Because that was a quick pick for a couple of months.
Yeah.
I mean, was.
Yeah, it's back on the shelf.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood, though, The Handmaid's Tale is still continuing to be checked out regularly because of the TV show. And again, I think with what's going on, it's a timely read.
It's a timely book for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
What are you teaching, Nick White? When you teach fiction, when you teach creative writing and you have young writers in your care, I know when I took a creative writing course at Ohio State, I was compelled to read if I wasn't writing. So what should people be reading?
I want to champion the short story. I think short stories I teach primarily fiction writing to graduate and undergraduate students. And so I teach a lot of short stories because it's nice to sort of bring a story in and sort of look at it and see it how it's like created craft wise, you know, and one person that I go back to, and it's probably cliche, is Alice Munro. I love her.
Yeah.
I think really anything by her is great. And I teach her stories. I teach the writer Amina Gauthier. Hmm. She primarily publishes on small presses, but she had her latest collection, The Loss of All Lost Things. She had this beautiful story, I think it's the title story, about parents dealing with the aftermath of losing a child, and that the child was abducted, and so they don't know what happened to the child. And no spoilers by telling you this, they don't find out what happened. And so it's like living with this like absence and not really knowing what to do with it. And it's rendered in such like it's such a beautiful, beautiful story.
That would be something, a challenge to do a theme like that in a short story. I mean, to really sort of fill it with grief or longing or whatever. And I guess that's the craft. That's why you're teaching it. Probably one of the reasons. What else do you have? What's on your bedside table now? That's the New York Times question about all writers and authors.
Yeah.
So what's on your bedside table now to read?
I've been going back to Ann Tyler. I don't know why. I just finished
Reading Lessons.
Yeah. And I just reread Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant, which I think is one of my favorite books. It's about a family in Baltimore. Baltimore is her sort of
beat,
where she sets it. Yeah. And now I've gone back to The Accidental Tourist, and I plan to read Breathing Lessons. And I think more so than the story itself, and this is just me, and this may be too precious, I don't know, but like I just really, really love her sentences.
Mm.
Her sentences are just so spectacular. You could take them out of the novel, I think, and each one is like a little mini story within itself, almost, even down to the punctuation. I think she's very conscious of that. And I think the reason why I like her so much is a big influence of hers is Eudora Welty. And Eudora Welty is one of my all-time favorite writers. And she also has beautiful sentences as well. And so it's nice to just sort of lose myself in Ann Tyler's Baltimore, which is very different from the Baltimore and The Wire, if you've seen
that show. I was just going to say, it's like two worlds, right?
Yeah, two worlds.
But they do coexist.
They do.
You literally could cross the street and be in one for the other.
Yep.
Emily has just sent us an email recommending a quick pick.
Cool.
This is The Snow Child by Ewan Ivey, which I got as a quick pick from the library. Beautiful and amazing, and I'm so glad I picked it up.
Oh, good.
The Snow Child.
It was a finalist for the Pulitzer last year, I think, and she has a new one out at, I can't remember what the title of it is. Off the top of my head, but it's gotten a lot of good press. So if she likes The Snow Child, she should definitely check out her newest.
When we come back in a few months, I'm sure that'll be the newest one. It'll be
there
a quick pick as well at the Columbus Library as well. Cassie Rose, what do you have for us? You are somebody who you read for pleasure and you read for a living and you read because you can and because it's what you do. And I was a little concerned when you were talking about the inspectors coming to your house that we'd see you on Hoarders. But no, that's not true at all. But you always bring – I always write down your recommendations and I always go and read them. And by the way, when I go on the Columbus Library website at 12:15 of a Friday after the show is on, generally the books you've recommended have moved down the chain of being available. So what else do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to recommend You Should Have Left by Daniel Kelman. It is a very small novel. You can read it in about an hour, and I can tell you it creeped me out.
Oh, no.
It was. It's really good, though. Yeah. I mean, it's not – I didn't mean like creep me out, like ew kind of thing. It is – it's like The Shining. And actually the little plot, the narrative is like The Shining. It's a screenwriter who is in a mountain house with his wife and his daughter. He needs to finish the script for this blockbuster as a sequel to a blockbuster movie that he wrote previously. He's having trouble. His agent is breathing down his neck. The guy is arguing with his wife all the time. And there's something wrong with the house. Mm-hmm. And that's what – and it's the kind of – it's a page-turner creepy is what it is.
Oh, I'm going to pick that up.
And it is – and it is at the library. I did check because it's a – it's
not anymore.
I was going to say it was – sometimes because it was originally published in Germany and it's been translated and whatever, but it's in the library now. But anyway, I'm not going to say any more because it would give it away. But the one thing I'm going to say is just make sure you understand what the last page is.
Oh, okay. Pay special attention.
It's a good hook.
So in the hour that you read it, spend 15 minutes of that hour on the last page and really get it, really understand it.
I can only say that what I thought was the last page wasn't the last page.
Got it. Oh. Okay. By the way, the new, soon-to-be-published novel by Eowyn Ivey is called To the Bright Edge of the World, a novel. So we will look forward to that.
Yeah.
That will be and she
actually,
was,
that's out.
That's out.
It was out last summer, and it's a beautiful book and beautifully published, too. The paper on it is really neat.
Yeah, it's really good.
But and then that's about
I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list.
An explorer that goes into a territory of Alaska while his wife stays at home, and it's their differing stories and of his exploration of some unfound territory. It's like in the 19th century.
We have about 3 minutes left. If you want to send an email, do it now. allsides@wosu.org. But there's one thing I wanted to ask each of you in the few minutes that we have left that I always mean to ask and I always forget. Is there one book that you read every year?
I don't. I've told this story before where I've calculated how many books I have to read, how long I think I'll live, how many books I read on average. And, you know, I've only got about 2,000 or 3,000 books left in my life. So I got to keep plugging ahead, man.
All new books for you. Right? How about you, Nick White?
Well, I think it changes. I used to always go back to A Separate Piece by John Knowles. Mm-hmm. And I just read a book that I think I'm going to continue to go back to and possibly teach. It's a young adult book, actually. It's called The Hate You Give.
Oh, my God.
By Angie Thomas.
What is that?
I just got a reaction from Robin Nesbitt.
She's a fellow Mississippi writer. She's from Jackson. It's about it's narrated by a young woman named Star, whose friend is gunned down by the police. And it causes a divide in the community. Star is a young African-American woman who is, if you know anything about Jackson, you know it's still a city that's racially divided in many ways. And she lives with her family, but she goes to school in a white area of Jackson. And so she's getting the two viewpoints of this horrible thing that happened. And, I mean, it's right up there, I think, with being as powerful as To Kill a Mockingbird.
I agree.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. It's just, she makes me so proud to be a writer from Mississippi. And if you haven't read that book, please check it out.
And
it's
it is
so
a
good.
Quick pick.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Author's,
yeah.
Author's name?
Angie Thomas,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Angie Thomas.
The Hate You Give and You is a U, not Y-O-U.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. The Hate You Give. Angie Thomas. Yeah. Yep. And Cassie Rose. How about you? We have 1 minute left. Do you read something every year?
I don't, but okay. I can say I'm rereading some of the classics that I read when I was, you know, in high school and college, and it's a different take on it now.
And I'm reading Roots for the first time by Alex Haley, and really, really loving and admiring it. It's hard to put down. That is our program for today. Today's All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is the branch manager at the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and she comes to us, thank goodness, every program with her quick picks from the library. And we are delighted to welcome to the family Nick White, whose novel is called How to Survive a Summer. It is very highly recommended. And you should then go take one of Nick's courses at the Department of Creative Writing at The Ohio State University. I have a suspicion he's a very tough grader. But Nick White, thank you for being here, and come on back and be with
us again.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Thank you, Sharla Knott, our producer. Thank you, producer Michael DeBonis. Thank you, our interns, Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Eric Kinley, and Owen Daugherty. Thank you, video production Rich Blue and Amber Blue. I am Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend Books. Go read.